Welcome back to this week's edition of the Midweek Reality Check with Michael Pinto, where I try to keep Wall Street and your money real.
The leaders of the global economy have replaced the free market, where the people have the power to decide prices and what is produced and what is the value of their money, with that of the artificial construct derived consisting of debt and currency purchasing power destruction. Hence, the economic zeitgeist of today has disregarded history and has fallen victim to the belief that sustainable economic prosperity depends on how much new debt a government is willing to issue. But this notion that prosperity depends on how much governments decide to stimulate their economies is completely and entirely false. Governments have no money. When they deficit spend, the newly issued public debt gets monetized by central banks. In the long term, the result is higher inflation and lower productivity because the government is a miserable and horrible distributor of capital. In other words, stagflation is the ultimate result, which is a really bad trade for a short-lived economic adrenaline shot. Germany's plan to increase spending significantly boosted European markets so far this year, with equities outperforming stocks of that in the United States. The euro is strengthening, but German bunds experienced their worst day since 1990. This is because Chancellor-in-waiting Friedrich Merz's commitment to juicing the economy through more spending was at first enthusiastically received. The German stock index saw a 3.4% rise on the announcement, but the 10-year bund yield increased by 30 basis points on the day. This proves that the German market has learned little from its own history. During the Weimar German Republic, the government's decision to finance World War I reparations by printing vast amounts of money led to an exponential price rise. And the effects were devastating as savings were obliterated, the middle class was rendered into penury, and social unrest ensued. People resorted to barter because the currency became worthless, absolutely worthless. And the economic stability was shattered, leading to political radicalization and the eventual rise of the Nazis. The once financially prudent Germany has fallen into this fiscal trap and spending trap once again. Germany's new spending policy under the leadership of Friedrich Merz is reminiscent to that of former ECB, European Central Bank head Mario Draghi. Merz is less poetic and original, so he borrowed Draghi's whatever it takes. If you remember, Mario Draghi said, "We will print as much money." How much, Mario? Whatever it takes to rescue the economy from the global financial crisis. And guess what? That is exactly what Chancellor Friedrich Merz is saying. It's going to be enough, whatever it takes. We're going to borrow and spend and print as much as it takes. It's not just Germany that has adopted this strategy. Let us not forget Liz Truss's economic plan, known as Trussonomics, aimed to stimulate the UK economy through increased public deficits. Her brief run as Prime Minister lasted from September 6, 2022 to October 25, 2022. The planning and announcement of her profligate fiscal spending strategy quickly led to currency and bond market chaos, with the pound dropping to a historic low against the dollar, just as it sent government bond yields soaring. The yields on 10-year gilts spiked from 1.8% to above 4.3%, and the 30-year gilt yields climbed from 2.3% to 5.1% by September 28, 2022. Her fiscal quote-unquote stimulus plan was so irresponsible that it raised fears of much higher inflation and also engendered solvency concerns. The rise in borrowing costs and currency chaos outweighed whatever economic benefit hoped for through more government spending. Her tenure lasted just 50 days, the shortest of any prime minister in history. All right, one last example, if you needed another one, of this spurious thinking can be found in the Japanese economy. You remember Abenomics? It was coined after Prime Minister Shinzo Abe. His approach to boost the floundering Japanese economy, which was in shambles since 1989, this was in 2012. It featured massive government spending combined with breakneck Bank of Japan money printing. That was Shinzo Abe's plan. The final results are clear. Let's look at the results. Japan's GDP in dollar terms has not grown for the past 30 years. Neither has its per capita GDP grown in the last 30 years. The Nikkei Dow is lower today than it was in 1989, and the debt monetization scheme sent the value of the yen crashing versus the US dollar by 50%. Unfortunately, the United States has yet to learn these lessons. Decades of pursuing growth on the back of deficit spending has finally started to take its toll on the economy. And let's get to some of the relevant data of the past week that helps illustrate this point. The February non-farm labor report highlighted the erosion that has started in the labor market. It is continuing. Now, there were a net 151,000 jobs created versus the 170,000 expected. Okay, not so much of a big deal. And the unemployment rate did tick up to 4.1% from the previous 4% level. The wrong direction, but a marginal move. But digging further in the report is where the real weakness could be found. The labor force participation rate fell to 62.4. That is the lowest level since January 2023. And the labor force declined by 385,000 people. A broader measure of unemployment that includes discouraged workers and those that are working part-time for economic reasons jumped half a percentage point to 8%. That's the highest level since October 2021. Also, the household survey, which is the Bureau of Labor Statistics method to calculate the unemployment rate, showed a plunge of 588,000 workers, not dollars, workers, sorry. The household survey showed a plunge of 588,000 workers. Those holding part-time jobs, but rather wanting to work full-time, swelled to 4.9 million, an increase of 460,000. So yes, don't just read the headlines. Listen to objective media sources like this one, which will tell you the real condition of the labor market. The labor research firm Challenger, Gray & Christmas showed that February private sector, not public sector, remember this is not Doge now, this is private sector job cut announcements were up from the 49,000 level in January to 172,000 in February. That was an increase of 250% month over month. Unless you think it was just a seasonal aberration that happens every January to February, the year-over-year number was up 100%, slightly over 100% more job cut announcements in this February than last February. Now, the major reason why Pento Portfolio Strategies moved to a more defensive stance in the portfolio in late December of last year was based on valuation. Now, valuation in of itself is not a timing tool, but it does give a clear picture of what the risk-reward dynamic entails. While we believed the market was not yet entering a recession, and we still don't think that's the case at this moment, or a liquidity crisis, it did at the time offer very little upside potential. It still is the case. Here is some of the math behind my rationale. The S&P 500 earnings per share for last year was $243. Let's assume for a moment that there will be no recession, no bad effects from the tariffs or the labor force crumbling. Let's just say there's no recession and the net effect of all of the things I just talked about is that we just get trend growth in GDP of 2% and inflation stays around 3%. Well, 3 plus 2 is 5. That would lead to 5% nominal GDP growth, which is highly correlated to the growth rate of earnings. That would equate to $255 per share on the S&P 500 earnings for 2025, the end of 2025. Then let's further optimistically assume Wall Street ascribes a historically rich 20 multiple to those pie in the sky. Well, not really pie in the sky. Let's just say hope for earnings. In other words, again, like no recession, no liquidity crisis, no negative earnings, just a normal 5% earnings growth year. This would indicate an S&P price target of 5,100 for year end. And that would be a 10% drop from the current level as of this recording. According to FactSet, who's the keeper of all these earnings projections, Wall Street anticipates an 11% growth rate in earnings this year. They still do. And that means the market is already trading over 20 times those hoped for and those pie in the sky earnings growth rates. So I'm saying is, even if we do get 11% growth rate in earnings and the market is fine, there is no problems in liquidity or recession, the market's already trading at a very rich 20-time multiple right now. So there still is very little upside. But think about it. What if we finally do get that recession that started in 2022 and the Fed is late to the game and unable to ameliorate the erosion in activity and spending because rising interest rates on the long end of the yield curve? These are the things I think about. Keep in mind, the S&P 500 is already down 5% year-to-date, and the NASDAQ is down 7% year-to-date. Meanwhile, the Russell 2000 is down 11% year-to-date. The market is speaking clearly and is way ahead of the big banks on Wall Street in its belief that tariffs, stubbornly high inflation, a reducing labor force, a frozen real estate transaction market, which is now leading to falling home prices, and a reverse wealth effect is now putting downward pressure on earnings and the multiple on those earnings. And for those wondering if tax cuts will offset all these negatives, understand this. The Tax Cuts and Jobs Act of 2018 lowered the corporate rate from 35% to 21%. That was a big boost in economic activity. Now we're hoping for the extension of those cuts by December. And that's going to keep the current rates in place. No new stimulus will be added unless there are first massive tariffs implemented to pay for the rate to drop below 20%. I know Trump wants 15%. But to get 15%, you're going to have massive offsetting tariffs first in place so the CBO can score that to get the votes from the conservative Republicans in Congress and in the Senate. They're known as the Freedom Caucus. Okay, I have two final quick thoughts for this week's podcast. The U.S. international trade deficit widened 34% in January to $131.4 billion, according to the Commerce Department. That was their data released last Thursday. It's the widest deficit going back to the start of the series in 1992. That is not going to dissuade Trump from his well-intended tariff war. He's trying to do whatever he can to boost the middle class and balance trade in the United States and rebuild America's infrastructure and rebuild our national security. It's very well-intended. I don't know if this is the best methodology or implementation, but this is what he's trying to do. And that $131.4 billion trade deficit is not going to dissuade him from pursuing his goal. And the final thought is inflation has at least temporarily placed the Fed put on ice. The Fed is not going to proactively cut interest rates aggressively right now. Inflation is still well above 2%. And tariffs have placed the Trump put on ice too. Trump has said he doesn't care about the market short term. He wants to rebuild the middle class. For those who still haven't realized it, the time for buy and hold complacency is over.
Thank you so much for listening to this edition of The Reality Check, 5 minutes of sanity in an insane world. Please remember, if you're not already an investor with PPS, you can email me directly using mpento@pentoport.com or call the office using 732-772-9500 to get information about our portfolio services. You should also go to Amazon and order my book, The Coming Bond Market Collapse. Subscribers should contact an investment advisor before acting on any information contained in this podcast. No information on this podcast constitutes an offer to sell or buy any financial instruments or to provide any investment services. Subscribers understand there's an inherent risk in investing. PPS is a registered investment advisor.